on?
Now we'll start.
Okay. Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 1:30. The date is, help me with the date.
21st.
August 21st, 2013. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. Title Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State on behalf of Scott Gessler, Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, Designee of Attorney General John Southers, and Jason Gellender, Senior Attorney Designee of the Director of Office of Legislative Legal Services, Dan Carton. Also to my left is Steve Ward of the Elections Division. Today we are meeting to consider title setting for one hearing. There are two titles for each measure. Any changes adopted to the title will be then adopted in the question. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet on the back table, and this hearing is being broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website. When the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the board will follow three steps. First, the board may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will first determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 1-40-106.5 of Colorado Revised Statutes. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we will take testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after testimony is complete. The decision is reached by two or three members of the board, or two of the three members. Please take note that we're not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting a title. Furthermore, we are not concerned with legal or constitutional objection to the measures, except to the extent such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the board to set titles or the correctness of the titles in the summaries themselves. Anyone dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. The only agenda on today's item, or only item on today's agenda, a lot of meetings here, is 20-14, number 45, establishment of a state-owned bank. If the proponents could come forward to the podium and introduce yourselves.
I'm Robert Bowes.
And I'm Jason Bosch.
All right. Does anyone have, I think we'll take single subject first. We've done this title a couple of other times, and that's always a big issue. So before we get to the merits of it, is there anything that proponents would like to say about the single subject issue?
Sure.
You can go ahead.
Yeah, okay. This is obviously a key point in this particular proposal. And so I went and reviewed some of the law and rulings on this. A couple things I noticed that I think are important is that the General Assembly has directed that the single subject and title requirements for initiatives be liberally construed, whatever that means. I have my own idea. In order to preserve and protect the right of initiative and referendum, it also in the Colorado Constitution, Article 5, Section 1, 5.5, it says that, of course, no measure shall be proposed by petition containing more than one subject, which shall be clearly expressed in its title. Through the passage of this, voters took the affirmative action to eliminate the practice of combining several unrelated subjects in a single measure for the purpose of enlisting support from advocates of each different subject. So, also in the Secretary of State's ballot title requirements, in accordance with Colorado law, ballot titles in the fourth main bullet says, must unambiguously state the principle of the provision sought to be added. This seems rather important to me, and I'll get to my point here in just a minute. The reason for that is that when I look back over the title that's been given to this proposal, I could see that it could be confusing to voters because of the way it's written. There's this whole series of issues, it seems, or that could be misinterpreted as the purpose of this. And so in that regard, I wrote up my own proposed title and sent it to Stephen. And I think you guys may have, they received that.
That has been forwarded to the board.
Yeah, okay. And I have reviewed that, actually, and have a slight change with it. But I did that for the purpose of making it clear what the single subject is versus the means by which that purpose, as the law and the rulings on it, the principle, the means by which that principle is going to, would be instituted should this be passed. So I just wanted, I think that was just a key point that I wanted to make before we start, that I think by slightly rearranging the structure of the title, we could be clearer in what the main single subject is, the main purpose and principle, or whichever term you wish to use, and then the means by which that would occur. And those are two different things, and I think we've been getting confused over this. And the one other thing I would add is that in one of its rulings, the Supreme Court said that, furthermore, a proposed initiative contains multiple subjects, not only when it proposes new provisions constituting multiple subjects, but also when it proposes to repeal multiple subjects. And I know last time we got into discussion about all of these things that may or may not be affected by this this proposal. And I want to make it clear that this proposed section doesn't change or repeal any other section of the law, except where it conflicts with the sole purpose of this section, in which case they simply wouldn't apply. They're not being repealed. So as a layman, you know, that's my spin on this. Thank you.
Anyone have any questions for the proponents? No? Okay, thank you. We have two people signed up, and so I'm not sure whether this is on the title or on the single subject, so let me just ask Jason Dunn. Do you want to comment on the single subject? Okay, Michael Hoke. Sure.
Again, I'm Michael Hoke from Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck. We're here on behalf of Elector Don Childers, who's the president and CEO of the Colorado Bankers Association. We've had this conversation a couple of times before already, so I just want to get straight to the point on single subject. This board denied the last measure, number 39, on single subject grounds, and the fact is, nothing substantive has changed to affect that decision. I think that the easiest way to see that is just to walk through the substantive changes and note that they don't alleviate any of our concerns that we discussed the last time. The first change we note is that they've added a few definitions, one of which purports to set forth the sole purpose of the measure. And, you know, that clarifies maybe the intent of the proponents, but does nothing to change the fact that we've got some Tabor issues that we discussed the last time. You've got exemptions from Tabor for debt issuances. You've got exemptions from Tabor on the revenue side that cause serious problems under Supreme Court precedent dealing with single subject challenges. The next change that we note is that they have purportedly limited the bank's authority to issue debt. Now it says they can only do it to establish adequate capitalization. Couple of things to note. One, again, that doesn't affect the revenue problems at all. Two, they still exempt the debt issuances from all their Tabor restrictions, namely voter approval and, you know, notice. The bank still has complete discretion to issue any amount of debt it thinks appropriate without taking it to the voters. They can set the terms, the maturity, the everything without taking it to the voters. And the third thing I think I want to observe is that even though it may look on its face that they've limited the authority of the bank to issue bonds, really what's happened is they've just hidden that authority. If you look at the definition they added of adequate capitalization, it suggests that capitalization means the reserves required for the bank to issue the loans that they feel necessary or proper to issue. Meaning any time that the bank deems it necessary to hold more reserves to back the loans it wants to make, it's authorized to issue bonds. So it hasn't eliminated any of the bank's authority to issue bonds. It's just caused even more voter confusion. It's hidden it. You know, this is precisely what the Supreme Court's talked about in additional measures being coiled up in the folds here. The next change in the measure that I noticed was that they've changed some of the provisions dealing with the capitalization. Now, instead of all funds being capital of the bank has discretion to decide which state funds to some extent constitute capitalization of the bank. Again, that doesn't alleviate any of the concerns we talked about the last time. It just gives the bank more discretion over which funds of the state the bank can exercise control over. And I think the last substantive change that I noticed is pretty telling here. They still authorize the bank to transfer monies to the state general fund. They still exempt those explicitly from Tabor. But now they have added a statement saying, and those funds can be used without limitation to further certain purposes. They've doubled down. They've said, no, we really mean it. We want these funds to be exempt from Tabor. So nothing in the measure has changed from the last time to eliminate any of the multiple subjects that caused this board to decide that the measure violated the single subject requirement. And so I think on that basis, the same decision is warranted here. This measure contains multiple subjects. It not only establishes a state bank, but it also exempts certain revenues and debt issuances by a state agency from the provisions of Tabor. And I did want to address one concern that came up in the discussion on Measure 39. Madam Chair, you had expressed the concern that funds deposited in the bank would already have been subject to Tabor limitations, so that if funds then later transferred out of the bank were exempt from Tabor, it really wouldn't matter. The money was subject to the limitations beforehand. But this measure, again, has made it even more explicit. The purpose of the bank is to go and raise funds by making profits on loans and transfer those profits that were never subject to Tabor limitations to the state general fund, again, exempting them from revenue caps. And so it's clear to me that we have all the same problems we had the last time. Nothing's been fixed, and so the same decision is warranted. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. So let me ask the proponents, with regard to specifically what was said, I understand your first time up, you were talking more about what you think the case law is related to single subject, but as to whether you've made any substantive changes that you believe would correct any deficiencies that were found last time, if you can limit your comments to that.
Well, part of the issue seems to be interpretation. I mean, personally, The fact that Mr. Hoke, you know, goes through this enumeration of conflicts with Tabor, I don't see as relevant whatsoever. Because the logic that he has presented, this was true last time, and it's true today, is that, and this is why I use the term be liberally construed. What does this mean? Okay, so we have a proposed law. We can look at this law in two different ways, right? We can look at it as something outside of the body of constitutional and statutory law and criticize it and come up with all these places that might conflict. Or we can look at this proposed section as how it would operate from within that body of law. Now, if I were perhaps Mr. Hoke arguing this, I would use both ways of doing it, which is what we saw last time, where if this were a law, people could spend any amount of money doing anything, ignoring the sound banking principles set forth in the law, which are perhaps different than what someone working for the for-profit banks might consider to be sound banking practices, because certainly public banks and for-profit banks have much different practices, and I could readily present a whole series of articles that would support my position on that. Okay, so the question is, you know, how is this liberally construed? If it's construed as being, as if you're seeing it inside of the body of law, right, then it simply is the means by which the principal purpose of the section is facilitated, okay?
And let me just stop you, because I understand what your argument is. Okay. I guess my question is, do you have any comment on whether you made any changes to it that you believe would alleviate those issues?
Well, as far as the Tabor issues go, which I did not say the last time, but I think it's worth stating, or maybe I mentioned it once, but as Mr. Hoke said, these are profits from lending. They are not tax monies, okay? And as I understand, the purpose of Tabor was to deal with the raising of taxes and issues, and that's generally how it's, you know. So I did try to clarify a few things in this to make it more clear. For example, one of the issues Mr. Hoke raised on the issue of bonds, right? Perhaps it could have been clearer. What I really meant with that was that the capitalization of the bank is what I'm talking about, is the initial capitalization of the bank, although I did not use that term, right? Secondly, this idea that they could issue bonds for whatever amounts of money, you know, that's not sound banking practices, you know. Part of the reason that I, you know, it may be sound banking practices and for-profit banking, but we see where that has led. As I said, I brought plenty of materials to show that. But that's not sound banking practices in terms of a public bank to use bonds for deficit spending. I just reject that idea completely, and I don't think that there's any proof of that anywhere that Mr. Hoke could show. You know, as far as the transfer goes, I still insist that this doesn't make it multiple subjects because a bank would transfer these monies and not be subject to other restrictions. It doesn't make it multiple subjects. It's just enabling the bank to do its job, just like the Bank of North Dakota does its job. That's how the bank does it. And, you know, why the profits or in this case it would be surplus, since it's a nonprofit body, would come under this law from, you know, a non-taxable, non-tax source is beyond me. I don't understand the logic of that. So that's the best I can answer. So,
okay. Anyone have any questions? No? All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Discussion by the board?
I guess my preliminary thought would just be that, you know, we found that we had multiple subjects last time because of the potential consequences. I don't see any changes to the language of the measure that seem to make a difference at this point. That would be my main comment.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we're essentially in the same place we were before. I'm not sure I agree with Mr. Hoke that it's really worse, but the same problem exists, which is, even setting aside kind of the income side of things to the bank, it seems to me there's two subjects. One is creating a bank to do these things at the beginning of the measure, basically setting up a bank that would allow the state to take its funds out of the private for-profit banks, and also allow individuals, presumably, or businesses to use this bank to deposit their money or invest in through bonds without engaging in what the measure calls the speculative and fraudulent practices of those banks, which to me is a perfectly legitimate single subject. But then Section 9, again, still creates what to me is clearly an additional subject, which is exempting the money that this bank creates from the limitations of Tabor. Tabor is not just about raising taxes. It's about limiting the growth of government. So Section 9 is clearly about allowing the funds that the bank creates to enable the state to expand, maintain, or restore essential services and facilities, et cetera. And that is a different subject than creating a bank. Creating a mechanism for the state to spend more money is a separate subject. Tabor today would be multiple subjects. That's the Supreme Court's made that very clear. And so those two subjects, expanding the government and creating a state-owned bank, to me are separate subjects, even if I agree with the proponents that there may be sort of one kind of purpose here, one underlying motivation, but they go about it through multiple subjects, and that's no less of a problem in this version than the last one.
Yeah, and substantively, I don't see a change. You know, I voted for a single subject last time. I'm not sure that I, at this point, think it constitutes two, but I think the analysis by the proponent that, you know, this isn't tax money and therefore it doesn't have anything to do with Tabor is just, I mean, the problem is I think you could get to the same point without doing this, but the fact is Tabor has to do with the base, and it doesn't matter whether you collected it by taxes or some other way. If you move it back into the general fund and it contributes to the base, then it has to do with Tabor. And that's the limitation that you're seeking to expand. So it's not just about taxes. I mean, having said that, I'm not sure it necessarily creates two subjects, but the problem wasn't removed, and so I'm just not sure, you know, why we're back here. But if you want to comment really specifically on that point, I mean, okay, go ahead.
For Mr. Domenico.
I don't know that we're going to answer questions.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, here's the difficulty I have here, is that Mr. Domenico makes the point here that in Section 9, that by exempting this money, it creates a separate subject. My contention would be that the objectives of the bank, as stated at the beginning of the measure, right, that's why this money is exempted. Okay, so it's really to fulfill those objectives. I don't see it, and I agree with you that it's not a separate subject because of that. It's along those same very lines. It's pointed towards the same objective that's stated at the beginning of the section, in number one, I believe, you know, where there's this, a list of why we're doing this, and that's why.
I understand that, but with Tabor, yeah. I mean, you know, as we've just stated, the Supreme Court has said, you know, unequivocally that it wouldn't have passed single subject. Tabor did the same thing. The purpose is to limit the growth of government, and then it went through, and it, you know, I mean, just like you said, Tabor has to do with taxes. That's what people thought. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what people thought the single subject was, but it really had, you know, six or seven provisions.
So then, this raises the question for me, is that within the Constitution and statutes of the state of Colorado, it's hard for me to imagine that there aren't conflicts in laws all over the place.
Conflict in laws, sure, but we're talking about whether one particular constitutional provision is a single subject, not whether it conflicts. That's not our jurisdiction.
Well, why would its conflict make it a separate subject? I just don't get it, logically speaking. You know, if it conflicts, okay, it conflicts. Why does that make it a separate subject? You know, that's my question. Okay, it's not something I agree. You can answer it, maybe. It's rhetorical, but that would be because how you rule on this, you know, is obviously important. It'll affect what I do next,
sure,
in terms of how I rewrite it. And so it's important for me to understand the logic, right? Because in some ways, what I get here is is like a court ruling. You know, it's cutting it off at early, right? I can appeal this to the Supreme Court, course, but in a sense, it's a ruling at a certain level, right? And I need to understand it if we're going to get anywhere on this. So, and so that's why I'm, you know, in a sense, asking a question: is okay? So there's a conflict here. Why does that make it a second subject? That's
sure. Okay. Any other comments from board?
My explanation of why there's a conflict, why this creates a second subject, is because it seeks to do two things that are not necessarily related to one another. One is creating a bank where the state could put its money and where the people could put their money. Two is creating a mechanism by which the state budget can grow without being limited by the current limitations. Each of those is a perfectly fine goal, purpose to have. They're not necessarily related to one another, and they're different subjects. And so if someone wanted to come create a state bank, as I think the very first time we saw this, at least if there was a problem, I didn't catch it. The first bank seemed to me to be just the first part, creating a bank. So the state wouldn't be investing in private for-profit banks. But when you also are trying to evade, exempt the entire state budget from current constitutional limitations, which is what this does, then that's a separate subject. And you have to convince the voters separately of those two things if you want to do those two things. I think that's what the single subject requirement does. if this were subject to all the income, the revenue and expenditure limits, then I don't think there'd be a problem. But it specifically says it's not, and those are two separate things you have to get approval from separately.
Do you have anything?
Go ahead.
Related to?
The only thing I would clarify about that is that the single purpose isn't just to create a state bank. It's to create an effective state bank. And
I think we're just trying to
all those different reasons.
Sure. Okay. I think we're just trying to answer the question that you asked. So, do you have anything, Jason?
I'm thinking of whether the question would go to the substance or not, or if it goes to Mr. Bowe's last point. I do have a question. I think I would ask then, why is it necessary to do these exemptions from Tabor and other limitations to make this, allow this bank to be effective?
I suppose one could argue about what the effects of Tabor have been on the state. Okay. And we'll leave that aside for the moment. From my perspective, the services provided by the state have been shrinking for a variety of reasons, one having to do with Tabor, two having to do with the choking of the money supply and other things.
But what does that have to do with an effective bank?
Well,
I mean, that has to do with an effective state.
Well, okay. If the revenues from the bank were subject to Tabor, to those limitations, or whatever other law may restrict that. It could be Tabor, it could be something else. If they were subject to that, then we're basically just at a standstill, that what we can provide is simply not keeping up with the demands that are needed. And, we're going in the wrong direction.
But it's not, because just because you transfer money doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to cause an overage. I mean, there's a formula that goes into Tabor. Why does transferring money, I think it's a question, what does having an effective bank have to do with whether you can transfer money out of that bank to the state?
I don't think the issue is whether you can transfer it. It's whether it's subject to the restrictions of Tabor, as I understood what Mr. Domenico was saying. I'm a little confused on that. I thought that's what he was really saying. It's not so much the transfer, because the transfer is absolutely necessary regardless of whether it would be subject or not. I mean,
right.
that's what the bank's there for, is it's the state DBA as a bank. That's at least in North Dakota it is. So it's really whether that income would be subject to this, and if it were, then it would have it would mean that the tax rates would then necessarily need to be changed, or the money raised by taxes would need to be lowered, and there would be perhaps incremental growth, but in my perspective is I'm saying that it wouldn't be adequate to do this, because what we're seeing is that more and more state services are becoming privatized all across the country. And that should be an indication that the state, and in particular, in this case, Colorado, is having difficulty maintaining the services that it traditionally was expected to provide. And so you're absolutely right in saying that this is a means for the state to be able to do what certain of its citizens believe is expected of it, which may involve, growth, and it may run counter to some other constitutional amendment, and so be it. That there's two amendments, and in areas where they conflict, this one fulfills its purpose, and in areas, I think, where In other areas, Tabor fulfills its function. And it's fairly common, I would say, in law, having seen, you know, read different amendments where conflicts between different laws are resolved in this manner. I'm not repealing Tabor, you know. I'm just saying it wouldn't, you know.
Sure.
Anyway.
All right. Anything else? You want to make a motion? You want to comment?
I guess my only comment would be that we didn't set a title on this last time. We found it constituted multiple subjects. I see no changes made to it that change my opinion on that. And therefore, I guess I would make a motion that we find that proposed initiative 2013-14 number 45 has multiple subjects and we don't have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. I think the title, we don't need to move to the setting of the title since the board has found we don't have jurisdiction over the title as it constitutes two subjects. As I stated earlier, any protest to the ruling of the title board can be made within 7 days to the Secretary of State's office, and that is the only item on our agenda, and we are adjourned.